Thank you very much, George, for that sobering analysis. I will mention that we have copies of Susan Thistlethwaite's paper, of George Hunsinger's paper, and Jerry Power's paper, which will be available on the table after the session is over for those who want copies. And Robert Royal will be making a copy of his paper available this afternoon, so if you're interested in receiving a copy of that, we can send you a copy of that. Our second presenter is Jerry Powers, who has been director of the Office of International Justice and Peace of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops since 1998. And he's been in that office since 1987. Earlier, he was foreign policy advisor, specializing in European affairs, religious liberty, and the ethics of the use of force. He's been involved in the drafting of the bishop's statements on Iraq since 1990. Jerry?
Thank you, David. The bad news is the parking attendant drove off with my suit coat. The good news is he didn't drive off with my text. David, thank you very much for the invitation. It's very good to be here at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and I'm particularly impressed with your program on religion and David Little, your predecessor's work on religion and foreign policy, because the Institute, through this program, has done as much as any institution in Washington to help people better understand the role, the important role that religion plays in international affairs and in resolving conflicts around the world. Gulf One did not require a significant rethinking of just war norms. Gulf Two does, at least to the extent that the Bush administration's moral case has rested on the right and duty to use unilateral, preemptive use of force in a post-September 11th world. In this paper, I'll argue first that Iraq is a hard case, made harder by 9/11, that has to be addressed. Second, just as hard cases make bad law, Iraq, as it is being argued by the Bush administration, could make for problematic morality. Third, morality is realistic, and there are realistic ways to deal with this hard case of Iraq short of war. Iraq, the hard case. Iraq is a poster child for three interconnected moral challenges posed by contemporary international relations. Rogue regimes that many argue are not deterrable, global terrorism, which is almost impossible to deter, and the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. When rogue regimes supporting global terrorism have or seek weapons of mass destruction, the threat posed by this deadly combination of forces is so great, even if the chance of the threat being carried out is relatively low, that it pushes traditional strategies and moral analysis to the limit. Whether one describes the current structure of the international system as a unipolar, uni-multipolar, or multipolar, it is indisputable that the United States has a preeminent military, political, economic, and cultural power and influence in the world. The attacks of 9/11 and their aftermath are giving the United States a new sense of vulnerability, yet have also affirmed U.S. global dominance. The combination of U.S. vulnerability and U.S. primacy has provided the Bush administration a stronger rationale for a U.S. exceptionalism that is manifested in a muscular unilateralism. Iraq is a test case for this muscular unilateralism. In the case of Iraq, muscular unilateralism is based on four assumptions that are morally problematic. One, the right to act preemptively against Iraq. Two, the objective of U.S. action should be the overthrow of the Iraqi regime. Three, the necessity and efficacy of military over non-military means. And four, the United States has a right to act unilaterally if others are not willing to do so. While the public rhetoric has changed in the past few months, in part in an effort to gain UN and allied support, it is significant that the Bush administration's case for war against Iraq has been made in the context of a strategic doctrine which places a priority on maintaining U.S. military dominance in the world and insists the traditional concepts of deterrence, traditional limits on the preemptive use of force, and traditional approaches to nonproliferation are no longer adequate to address global terrorist networks or rogue nations which seek or possess weapons of mass destruction. Underlying this new national security strategy is an important moral insight, that there is a moral imperative to address the Iraqi threat and threats like it. There's sometimes a tendency among those who are opposed to the war on terrorism or opposed to war in Iraq to minimize the threats and to lose sight of a fundamental moral obligation to act with resolve to defend innocent life and the common good. The United States, in collaboration with others, has not only a moral right but a grave obligation to defend the common good against mass terrorism and the threat Iraq poses. The difficult moral issue is not about this good end, but about the means. That is, how to defend the common good against such threats. Recognizing the people of goodwill may differ on how to apply just war norms in particular cases, the bishops fear the resort to war under present circumstances and in light of current public information would not meet the strict conditions in Catholic teaching for overriding the strong presumption against the use of military force. The bishops are particularly concerned in this case about just cause, legitimate authority, and the consequences of resort to war. Just cause. The principal problem with muscular unilateralism is its implications for just cause. In recent times, Catholic understand conceptions of just war teaching have limited just cause to defense against aggression. As Cardinal Ratzinger, head of the Vatican Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, noted recently, the concept of preventive war does not appear in the Catholic Catechism. What is the casus belli for a military attack on Iraq? Among the several causes put forward by the Bush administration, the most troubling is its argument for preemptive or preventive use of force. What is disturbing about this line of argument is that it takes the concept of preemption, which has always been seen as an exceptional case when there was a clear and present danger, and turns it into a new doctrine about the legitimacy of unilateral use of preventive force to deal not just with imminent threats, but with only incipient or gathering dangers. In their statements, the bishops have asked skeptically, where would this doctrine lead? What criteria would permit Pakistan, Israel, and India to have nuclear weapons, but not Iraq, Iran, or North Korea? Would the world be a safer place if all countries embraced this new doctrine of preventive force to deal with the serious problem of the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction? Like many ethicists, the bishops recognize that preemptive or anticipatory use of force is sometimes morally permissible, but in the exceptional case. It is particularly difficult to justify in the case of enforcing nonproliferation when the nation using preemptive force itself relies on weapons of mass destruction. Now, ethicists and others differ on whether Iraq poses an imminent danger or clear and present danger that would justify preemptive use of force. The principal concern is not whether a factual case can be made that an imminent threat justifies preemption, but that the Bush administration is seeking to justify the preventive use of force against merely potential threats. Preventive war, as the first speaker pointed out, would represent a sharp departure from just war norms and set a terrible precedent. If the administration is instead redefining preemption in order to deal with weapons of mass destruction held by rogue states, that must be done very carefully so that it does not erase the vital distinction between impermissible preventive and permissible preemptive interventions. Given the negative precedents involved in expanding the definition of preemption, it must be clear what criteria would justify it. Possession alone of weapons of mass destruction, intent to possess, threatened use, possession and a history of aggression. For these reasons and others, the bishops have tried to reinforce the existing conceptions of just cause by questioning the morality of the use of force, absent clear and adequate evidence of an imminent and grave danger. A second, less problematic justification involves Iraq's alleged link to terrorism. While the administration has not made it the principal case for going to war with Iraq, it has tried to connect the Iraqi regime to al-Qaeda. According to the bishops, there would be just cause to use force against Iraq if there was clear and adequate evidence of Iraqi involvement in the attacks of September 11th. In that case, the use of force would be an act of self-defense, just as force could be justified against the Taliban in Afghanistan, given the Taliban's intimate relationship to al-Qaeda, and it's the considerable evidence at the time that al-Qaeda was responsible for the attacks of 9/11. The key factual question is whether and to what extent Iraq is tied to al-Qaeda or similar terrorist groups. A third basis for justifying force is humanitarian intervention. In many respects, humanitarian intervention represents St. Augustine's classic case, that love, charity, may require force to protect the innocent. Pope John Paul II, citing the conscience of humanity and international humanitarian law, has gone against most interpretations of international law in claiming the nations and the international community have not only a right but a duty of humanitarian intervention where the survival of populations and entire ethnic groups is seriously compromised. Humanitarian intervention requires a composite moral judgment that considers a range of justifications for action. Is it genocide, human rights abuses, merely an undemocratic regime, the causes of a crisis, repression, civil war, a failed state, the objectives that you're seeking to achieve, regime change, merely to contain the conflict, to provide a safe haven for those who are threatened, and the means used, anywhere from diplomacy on the one hand to the use of military force on the other. I would argue that military intervention to overthrow a regime should be the exceptional case that requires a very high threshold to justify, a threshold such as genocide, mass starvation, or similar mass suffering. Now, recognizing that there is a right and duty of humanitarian intervention, but narrowly limiting it to these high threshold cases, provides one means of ensuring that it is an authentic act of international solidarity and not, as small countries have a legitimate right to fear, a cloak for great power dominance, as it sometimes has been in the past. In the case of Iraq, humanitarian intervention has already taken place, at least insofar as the international community has provided a safe haven for the Kurds since the end of the Gulf War. And the Kurds were victims of a genocidal campaign in 1988 that included the use of weapons of mass destruction. Now, those still under the Iraqi government's control face gross human rights abuses, especially if they oppose the regime. But those abuses do not meet the high threshold that should be required for military intervention to overthrow another government. U.S. claims to be acting out of altruistic concern for human rights in Iraq should engender a centered amount of skepticism, given that some of the same officials now advocating war were actively involved in the U.S. support for Iraq, including military support, throughout the 1980s, including during the genocidal campaign against the Kurds. The least problematic justification for military force is in response to a material breach of the ceasefire resolutions. According to James Turner Johnson, while it might not be prudent, the deliberate violation of the 1991 truce by Saddam Hussein's regime in principle has reopened the Gulf War and justifies resumed military action against the regime. The Catholic bishops have not addressed this question in their statements to date, in part because of their prudential judgment that resuming inspections would provide a better, less harmful, and more effective alternative to using force to enforce the UN resolutions. They have urged, however, the distinction be made between efforts to change unacceptable behavior and efforts to end a government's existence. The objective of any use of military force should be disarmament, according to the ceasefire resolutions. The threat to overthrow the regime might help ensure Iraqi compliance with UN resolutions, but it also might complicate such efforts. Whatever the case, the overthrow of a regime has traditionally been considered a violation of right intention, though certainly some exceptions might be warranted. It would be easier to justify the use of limited force or coercive inspections to disarm Iraq if it were approved by the UN, if it did not simply punish Iraq, but had a reasonable chance of eliminating its weapons of mass destruction and ensuring Iraqi compliance with its obligations, and if force were designed to avoid and limit civilian casualties. The second concern is legitimate authority. Just as they are wary of expanding just cause to justify force against Iraq, the bishops are skeptical about the administration's insistence that it has a right to act unilaterally without some form of international sanction. Now, legitimate authority does not require international sanction or UN approval for the use of force. But the prudential judgment of the bishops is that in the case of Iraq, prudence dictates it for several reasons. First, if the U.S. is truly upholding the credibility of the UN, it can scarcely ignore the UN's own decisions about how to enforce its own resolutions. Second, international sanction provides necessary checks and balances, especially given the troubling precedent involved in the world's only superpower proposing to use preventive force to overthrow another regime. And third, the success of any effort to rebuild Iraq after a conflict and the success of a wider war on terrorism will require the support of Arab states, our allies, and others in the international community. Probably of success and proportionality. The use of force must have serious prospects for success and must not produce evils and disorders greater than the evil to be eliminated. In their November statement, the bishops recognize that not taking military action could have negative consequences. There are problems with not acting. At the same time, they are concerned that war against Iraq could have unpredictable consequences, not only for Iraq, but for peace and stability elsewhere in the Middle East. And they pose a number of questions and concerns regarding that. Some have criticized the bishops for making out a worst-case scenario in terms of these potential consequences related to success or proportionality, potential war in the Middle, wider conflict in the Middle East, etc. In response, I would say that religious leaders surely are not well-placed to make these what are essentially speculative judgments about what might happen as a result of the use of force, and the bishops acknowledge that. But it is not the role of religious leaders, nor is it the role of the just war tradition, to encourage a permissive attitude toward war on the part of decision makers, who, in justifying war, are already tempted to adopt the most optimistic scenarios about the likely consequences. If good moral analysis is realistic about the need to use force at times to deal with injustice, it is equally realistic about the consequences of doing so, especially given the abundant evidence of civilian suffering, unintended consequences, and failed efforts to achieve greater justice and peace through war. The burden of proof is on those who would justify war to make a convincing case that it would not result in the unintended and untoward consequences that so often accompany modern war. So what can be done? If Iraq is a hard case that has to be dealt with, yet going to war to overthrow the Iraqi regime is morally problematic, what are we to do? If the burden is on those advocating war to justify it morally, the credibility of those opposing war depends on their ability to provide a realistic alternative. There are never easy or perfect answers to hard cases, but in the bishop's view, a strengthening of current efforts in enforcement, containment, and deterrence would seem to be more realistic than resorting to war, with all its troubling precedents and potentially negative consequences. And in the discussion, we can get into more details on those three dimensions. In conclusion, September 11th has dramatically changed the way our country thinks about war and peace. The world has changed. The threat of mass terrorism by global terrorist networks is no longer just a thing of arcane Pentagon war games. It is a reality that must be dealt with. But much of what has changed is not the world, but our perceptions of the world. Because the unimaginable happened, we have, not surprisingly, become radically risk-averse in our assessment and tolerance of threats around the world. Iraq is Exhibit A. The threat from Iraq has not changed in the past year, Yet it no longer seems incredible to believe that just maybe Iraq's weapons of mass destruction might be used against us, and we cannot wait, as President Bush has said, until we see the mushroom cloud to act against this threat. Based on what we know, however, there is no new evidence, there's no new precipitating event, no new threatening actions by the Iraqi government, no new reason to go to war that it did not exist 1, 2, 4, or even 6 years ago. It is entirely legitimate to ask, therefore, why now? What is the basis for claiming a unilateral right to use preemptive force to overthrow the Iraqi regime? What would be the consequences for Iraq, the Middle East, and international relations? The bishops don't presume to have all the answers to these questions. They focus on them, however, because they are concerned that the hard case of Iraq could be used to weaken just war norms in unnecessary and inappropriate ways. In posing the questions, they place the burden on those advocating the use of force to give clear and convincing answers before the power of the world's mightiest military is unleashed on Iraq. Thank you.